Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, COVID post-holiday uptick finally hits Midland, by Stuart Doreen. Midland health officials expected a post-Thanksgiving increase in the number of COVID-19 cases. Last week, that increase happened. By most metrics reported by Midland Health and the City of Midland, the next wave of cases appears to be taking place inside Midland County. The first piece of information came Monday morning when the hospital reported 365 people tested positive at its facilities during the New Year's Day week, the most since the 365 during the week of December 5th. Midland Health also reported a 29.2% positivity rate at its testing clinics last week. That appears to be the second highest weekly percentage of positive tests during the pandemic, behind 31.8% during the week of July 4th. Later in the day, the City of Midland, using Midland Health Department information, added more evidence of a post-Thanksgiving spike. The Health Department reported 171 cases on December 28th, 185 cases on December 29th, 120 on Wednesday, and an unofficial total of 723 cases during the entire week. That total is the most since the week of November 29th to December 5th. And to show there hasn't been a letdown, the city reported another 100 cases on Sunday, which, if confirmed, will be the most cases on a Sunday since at least late October. It does appear we are having an uptick in cases over the past week, wrote Dr. Larry Wilson in an email to the Reporter Telegram. We had anticipated this a couple of weeks ago as a result of Thanksgiving, but it didn't happen then. But here we are now. The City of Midland also reported two deaths Monday. Both took place Saturday. The first was a man in his 60s that was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. The other was a female in her 80s that was at home. Both were reported to have had underlying health conditions. The number of Midland County residents that have died during the pandemic increased to 187. The number of total cases reported through Sunday rose to 13,694. For a few weeks, it appeared that Midland County had avoided the post-Thanksgiving COVID-19 increase seen in other communities, like the largest metropolitan areas of the state and West Texas areas like Abilene and San Angelo. From late November, the health department showed weekly COVID-19 case totals had decreased 4 out of 5 weeks, falling to 547 during the week of Christmas. The Department of State Health Services also reported the percentage of COVID patients in region hospitals has even increased in the past 3 days and stands at 12.15%. Other notables included that 32% of the rooms at Midland Memorial Hospital were occupied by COVID-19 patients Monday morning, the most since December 17th, and a 7 percentage point increase from December 26th. Midland Health also reported its COVID wing rooms are 85% occupied by active cases, and its critical care COVID unit rooms are 81% occupied. When including convalescing cases, those percentages jump over 90%. This article is entitled, Pfluger Joins House Members Challenging Presidential Election Results, by Caitlin Randall. Texas District 11 Representative August Pfluger said he would join about 140 U.S. House members in challenging the presidential election results at a joint session of Congress on Wednesday. In a statement released Saturday, Pfluger said he will be supporting an election challenge and called for, quote, a full debate on all matters related to the election, unquote. For our democracy to function, everyone must trust in it, and millions of Americans right now do not, he said. 34% of Americans said they do not trust the results of the presidential election, according to a poll from Quinnipiac University. A majority of Republicans, however, do believe there was widespread voter fraud, 77%, according to the poll. The poll found 97% of Democrats and 62% of independents believe President-elect Joe Biden's victory was legitimate. Pfluger joins 140 U.S. representatives and 12 senators who have said they will vote to reject the results of the Electoral College in swing states when Congress meets Wednesday to certify the election. Senators Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley, Republican Missouri, are leading the efforts to challenge the Electoral College results. In a joint statement from the 12 senators, they called for an emergency 10-day investigation into allegations of voter fraud. A fair and credible audit, conducted expeditiously and completed well before January 20th, would dramatically improve Americans' faith in our electoral process and would significantly enhance the legitimacy of whoever becomes our next president, they said in the statement. A 10-day audit into the results would leave just 4 days between when the investigation is completed and Biden is set to be sworn in. The senators are also calling for individual states to convene special legislative sessions to, quote, certify a change in their vote if needed, unquote. Democrats in Congress have criticized the move as a last-ditch attempt to hand the re-election to President Donald Trump, and former Speaker of the House Paul Ryan called Republicans' efforts anti-democratic and anti-conservative. It is unlikely House Republicans will succeed in blocking the certification of Biden's win, as they are still hundreds of votes short of having a majority. Senator John Cornyn has not said if he will be voting in favor of an investigation. In a post on Twitter, he said he would welcome the debate, but questioned if any new evidence of election fraud would be presented. Pfluger was sworn into Congress on Sunday. He won the Republican nomination for District 11 against a dozen other candidates in March after receiving an endorsement from Trump. Election officials have denied there is any evidence of widespread voter fraud, and a statement from the Department of Homeland Security in November said the election was, quote, the most secure in American history, unquote. The GOP representatives and senators challenging Biden's win have not indicated that they will object to their own wins during the same election and with the same ballots. This article is entitled First Korean Restaurant Opens in Midland, Super Polo Restaurant Coming, by J.C. Lewis. Midland's first Korean restaurant, Appa Korean Restaurant, opened this December at 3303 North Midkiff Road, Suite 129. The restaurant serves barbecue Korean chicken wings, bibimbap, which is Korean mixed rice with meat and assorted vegetables on a hot stone dish and fried rice, and chef-created specials. The dessert menu includes tiramisu, mochi ice cream, cheesecake, and sweet sesame balls. The restaurant also serves beer and wine, including sake and Korean soju. Bibimbap comes with kimchi, radish salad, sautéed cucumbers, seasoned soybean sprouts, and broccoli, all made in-house to add to the dish while eating. Diners can choose between a spicy or mild sauce to mix with the dish. Chef's special items include cheese corn, grilled bulgogi, grilled galbi, grilled spicy pork, and Korean pork lettuce wraps. The restaurant offers edamame, takoyaki, sweet potato plate, seafood pancake, kimchi pancake, pan-fried sausage, egg rolls, spring rolls, and gyoza for appetizers. The restaurant offers dine-in, takeout, and delivery through Texas To Go. Appa Korean Restaurant is open 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday, and 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Just announced. Signage for a Super Polo has been set up at the corner of Rankin Highway and West Montgomery Avenue across the street from Detour Bar and Dead End Food Shack. Super Paulo has two locations in Odessa, one in Andrews and one in Seminole. Super Paulo menu includes charbroiled chicken, charbroiled pork ribs, brisket, sirloin, Chihuahua corn, and a variety of combo meals. For more information, visit superpaulotx.com.
Hello, this is Michael reading another article from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, January 5th. Planning and Zoning turns down electronic billboard. Commission approves permit request for West Midland Bar, by Mella McEwen. Planning and Zoning Commissioners unanimously denied plans for an electronic billboard at the Commission's first hearing of the year. Truesdell Equipment Company had requested a specific use designation with term for the billboard at 4805 West Interstate 20. Staff with the city's planning division had recommended denial of the request because the proposed site was too close to an existing billboard. Though applicants noted that the new billboard could be used to alert drivers to emergencies like an accident or mass shooting, commissioners agreed with city staff. Commissioners said the request could be resubmitted if the billboard were moved to the area that met city code standards. After being announced in the summer of 2019, Fair to Midland, a bar to be located at 1115 Trade Winds Boulevard, applied for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a bar. The request was unanimously approved. In announcing the bar in 2019, KPG Hospitality described Fair to Midland as a 12,000-square-foot indoor-outdoor venue that will feature an 8,000-square-foot patio with lawn and carnival games and two bars, one spanning both outdoors and the patio and the other dedicated to the outdoor area. Hours would be 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. the following day, Sunday through Saturday. Land at the intersection of Andrews Highway and Midkiff Road has been acquired by CG Midland LLC, which requested a zone change from MF-16, Multiple Family Dwelling District in part, and RR, Regional Retail District, on a 0.08-acre tract of land. The request was made to bring the tract in conformance with the zoning property to the east, which is to be developed into a Murphy gas station and convenience. The request was unanimously approved. A new Dollar General retail store is planned for the intersection of North Fairgrounds Road and Maple Avenue. Midland Fairgrounds DTP had requested a zone change from PD, Planned Development District for Housing Development, to LR, Local Retail District, on 1.58 acres inside an 8.15 acre area that had been set aside for the development of market-rate housing. The request was not expected to disrupt the amount of housing to be available and was unanimously approved. CY Houston Management Company, LLC, received unanimous approval of its request for a specific use designation with term to establish a hotel market for the sale of beer and wine for off-premises consumption in the Home 2 Suites under construction at 4104 North Big Spring Street by Hilton Midland East. The hotel market would operate 24 hours a day and would offer alcohol service from 7 a.m. to midnight Monday through Saturday and 10 a.m. to midnight Sunday. In other action, unanimously approved a request by Jennifer Cobb for a zone change from PD Planned Development District for Shopping Center to amended PD at the Walmart at 200 West Interstate 20. The request was made in order to update signage on the building. While there would be more signage, the signage would be smaller than the current signage. Approved a proposed preliminary plat by property owner Francisco Escalero to consolidate three lots and 33 feet of a fourth into one lot at East Golf Course Road and North Fort Worth Street. Midland Police Department say first traffic fatality of 2021 takes place on I-20, from staff reports. The first traffic fatality of 2021 took place Monday morning. The Midland Police Department reported Monday that a 42-year-old Midland man died after an early morning rollover crash along I-20. His was the first death on roads inside Midland County this year. Last year, there were 23. In 2019, there were 26. At approximately 2 a.m. Monday, members of the Midland Police Department and Midland Fire Department were dispatched to a one-vehicle crash located in the 2800 block of West I-20. The crash, according to Midland Police, involved a blue 1997 Chevrolet Suburban, whose driver, identified as 42-year-old Juan Martin Antonio Cortez of Midland, was the sole occupant of the vehicle. MPD reported Cortez was found to have been ejected and was deceased. The Midland Police Department Traffic Unit responded to the scene and conducted the accident investigation. The preliminary investigation found that the Suburban had been traveling eastbound on the South Service Road of I-20 and had attempted to enter the main lanes of I-20 via the ramp. The driver lost control of the vehicle and left the roadway with the vehicle rolling multiple times, at which point the driver was ejected. The investigation is ongoing. Next of kin has been notified.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reported Telegram for Tuesday, January 5, 2021. Pfluger sworn in. House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy swears in Congressman August Pfluger of San Angelo. They are joined by Camille Pfluger and their daughters Vivian, Caroline, and Juliana. Pfluger era begins. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas, District 11, was sworn in Sunday to represent the 11th District of Texas in the U.S. House of Representatives. It is an incredible, humbling honor to swear an oath before God to defend the Constitution and serve the wonderful people of the 11th District of Texas in Congress, said Congressman August Pfluger in a statement. The 29 counties of this remarkable district are home to the most decent, honest, hardworking men and women who feed, clothe, and power this nation. I could not be more appreciative of the trust they have placed in me, and I'm determined to work hard every day to be their voice and advocate in Washington. Contact Representative Pfluger's office through his website at pfluger.house.gov. He replaces Mike Conaway of Midland. The 11th District covers 29 counties in West and Central Texas. District offices for the 11th Congressional District are located in Midland, Odessa, San Angelo, Brownwood, and Granbury. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa. Midland, Odessa gas prices have fallen 1.7 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $2.05 a gallon Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa are 9.6 cents per gallon higher than a month ago and stand 39 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are gasoline prices in Midland, Odessa on January 4, going back 10 years. 2020, $2.44 a gallon. 2019, $2.45 a gallon. 2018, $2.47 a gallon. 2017, $2.19 a gallon. 2016, $1.78 a gallon. 2015, $2.20 a gallon. 2014, $3.09 a gallon. 2013, $3.15 a gallon. 2012, $3.24 a gallon. 2011, $3 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. When it's open, Midland County Tax Assessor Collector, 2110 North A Street, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Wednesday, Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, 688-4810. Midland Central Appraisal District, 4631 Andrews Highway, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, 699-4991. Department of Public Safety, Driver's License Office, 2800 Wright Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday and Wednesday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Tuesdays, 686-1120. How sick are you? Midland Memorial Hospital offers a nurse triage program, 68 Nurse. The program is designed to help people determine whether their health situation warrants a trip to the emergency room. Midland residents can call the line by dialing 686-8773. The program is free and available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Local nurses are available to help you determine the best place to receive care for your situation. 68 Nurse can help you save time and money by directing you to the most appropriate healthcare option, whether it's a neighborhood clinic, urgent care center, emergency room, or just staying home. Today in history. Today is Tuesday, January 5, the fifth day of 2021. There are 360 days left in the year. On this date, in 1949, in his State of the Union address, President Harry S. Truman labeled his administration the Fair Deal. In 1957, President Dwight D. Eisenhower proposed assistance to countries to help them resist communist aggression in what became known as the Eisenhower Doctrine. In 1972, President Richard Nixon announced that he had ordered development of the space shuttle. In 1998, Sonny Bono, the 1960s pop star turned politician, was killed when he struck a tree while skiing at the Heavenly Ski Resort on the Nevada-California state line. He was 62. Source, AP.
Midland Reporter-Telegram opinion page, Tuesday, January 5th. Guest view. 2020 was a struggle that everyday Americans faced with courage and sacrifice. As we mark the start of a new year, no one is lamenting that 2020 is in the rearview mirror. It was a year marred by loss, by a global pandemic that claimed hundreds of thousands of lives in the United States alone, and a year marked by economic hardship. Millions of employers scrambled to survive, and too many closed their doors permanently, as the economic crisis revealed flaws in our society that left too many people vulnerable. The resulting wreckage will be felt by millions of Americans for years to come. However, if great challenges reveal great weaknesses in society, they can also reveal hidden strengths. We've been accustomed to thinking of the generation that overcame the Great Depression and won World War II as the greatest generation, and many have often wondered whether that strength of national character still resides, too often unseen, in our society today. Surveying the challenges of this year, we'll join others in criticizing the missteps that too many of the institutions we depend on made this past year. To name just a small number of those, it should be clear that the federal government was too slow off the mark in developing a test for COVID-19, or it should have just adopted the test offered by the World Health Organization, a mistake that opened the door to greater calamity. Similarly, Congress passed a series of pandemic relief measures earlier in the year that helped, despite their flaws. Our elected leaders then let us down by spending the summer mired in politics. But through it all, we saw millions of frontline workers step into the fray and carry America forward. There is a reason nurses and other first responders have been hailed as heroes. They were, and they are. Our healthcare system adapted and got much better at treating the coronavirus, thereby saving lives. Meanwhile, grocery clerks suddenly found themselves on the front lines, keeping the shelves stocked and the checkout line running even as they put themselves at risk. Manufacturers and logistics companies were quietly adapting too, producing and shipping protective gear and so many other necessities. The end result has been that shortages have been short-lived and acute needs met far more often than not. At the same time, every day, tens of millions of Americans did the right things to protect themselves and others. Some people failed to socially distance, and we've had dust-ups over masks. But for every dust-up, we have seen scores of people who are foregoing visits to elderly relatives, celebrating the holidays while cloistered at home in small groups, and otherwise making everyday sacrifices for the benefit of our communities. And finally, our system has produced now a multitude of vaccines that have won quick emergency approval and are being distributed. That's credit to the innovative people, institutions, and companies that fast-tracked that work. There's been loss, and we may soon find that the recent surge in new infections reaches levels above the ability of our systems to withstand. But even if we reach that point, it should be clear that embedded deep within this country is everyday courage, sacrifice, and resilience. It's true that 2020 tested our resolve, and 2021 will start with pandemic challenges, but it will also remain true that we are stronger than we may think. There is a reason to be optimistic that bright days are ahead. Opinion column by the Dallas Morning News.
This is the obituary column, Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Donald Joe Coffin. Donald Joe Coffin, 75, passed away peacefully on Wednesday, December 30th at Midland Memorial Hospital. Don was born June 29, 1945, to W.L. and Betty Coffin in Abilene, Texas. Don attended Lee High School in Midland, Texas. He will be forever remembered by wife Maury Cawthon, daughter Tiffany Waters, son-in-law Lance Waters, and son Blake Cawthon, daughter-in-law Ann Cawthon, grandsons Landon and Lawson Waters, Luke Cawthon, and granddaughter Kate Cawthon. Don was predeceased by his parents W.L. Cawthon and Betty Hightower and sister Linda Cawthon. The family will receive friends on Thursday, January 7th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A private graveside memorial service will be held Friday, January 8th in a small town outside Abilene. Memorial donations may be made to Christmas in Action, Midland, Texas, or Wounded Warriors Project. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Linda Richard Keller. Linda Richard Keller, 77, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, January 2nd in Midland. The family will receive friends on Wednesday, January 6th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. A service will follow at 7:30 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel, led by Pastor Robert Murphy of Alamo Heights Baptist Church. On Thursday, the family will receive friends from 1 to 3 p.m. at Elmwood Funeral Home in Abilene, followed by a graveside service at Elmwood Memorial Park, led by son-in-law Mike Thibodeau. Linda was born March 27, 1943, to Lynn J. and Lucille Richard of Thibodeau, Louisiana. On January 26, 1964, she married Wayne Keller of New Iberia, Louisiana. Her family that remains include her husband, Howard Wayne Keller, son David Wayne Keller of Hewitt, Texas, daughter Deborah Jean Keller Thibodeau and husband Mike David Thibodeau of Portland, Oregon, her three grandchildren, sister Joan Richard Knight of Abilene, and her three daughters and their families. She was preceded in death by her parents, Lynn J. Richard and Lucille Bates Richard, and her husband Richard and Bates' grandparents. She would be pleased that in lieu of flowers, contributions may be made to Child Fund International, Gideon's International, or Alamo Heights Baptist Church of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Maxine Eckert Smith. Maxine Eckert Smith, 90, of Midland, passed away at her home on January 1st. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday, January 5th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be 1 p.m. Wednesday, January 6th, at Rest Haven Memorial Park, with Pastor Andy Hill officiating. Maxine was born on April 18th, 1930, in Midland, Texas, to Gus and Opal Eckert. Maxine is survived by her son, Mike Smith, and wife Pam of Midland, 7 grandsons, 1 granddaughter, 13 great-grandchildren, brother Gus Sonny Eckert of Midland, sisters-in-law Carol Smith and Audrey Smith. She was also blessed with a bonus son, Scott Lockler, and wife Janet of Midland. Maxine is preceded in death by her husband, Durwood Smith, daughter Monique Parker Ruthberg, and grandson Will Parker. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Oscar Gonzalez Jr. Oscar Gonzalez Jr. passed away on Saturday, December 26th in Midland. Oscar was born November 13th, 1974, to Oscar Gonzalez Sr., and Alma Carrillo in Denver City, Texas. He is survived by his parents, Oscar Gonzalez Sr., wife Imelda Gonzalez, and Alma Carrillo, husband Juan Carrillo, his 5 grandchildren, his many nieces and nephews, and a host of aunts, uncles, and cousins. Memorial service will be held for family only. In lieu of flowers, the family is asking you donate to Family Promise of Midland in Oscar's honor. his children would like for other children to have the same chance at life that they have had. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Stephen Rex Evans. Stephen Rex Evans, a friend to all and a mentor to many, died December 21st from complications following an aortic dissection. He was 58. Rex was born September 25th, 1962, in Stanton, Texas, to Bobby Joe and Renvi Lurleen Evans. His memory will be honored and kept alive by his loving wife, Ann Evans, his son, Garrett Evans, father, Bobby Joe Evans, sisters, Renvi Smith and Linda Rodriguez, brother, Joe Evans, nephews, Jacob and James Evans, and extended family members. Friends are invited to attend his service January 5th, 2 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Midland. In lieu of flowers or plants, please consider donations to Cal Farley's Boys Ranch, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, or the American Heart Association, or your favorite charity. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Wanda Hopkins Patterson. Wanda Hopkins was born in Stanton, Texas, to parents Jim and Ada Hopkins on August 29, 1929. At the age of 91, she died peacefully in her daughter's home in San Antonio on December 27th. On September 30, 1948, she married William Pat Patterson and moved to Midland. Wanda is preceded in death by her spouse, William Pat Patterson, also four grandchildren, Wanda is also survived by many loving nieces and nephews. Wanda was so loved by family and friends, she will be greatly missed. May she rest in peace in God's loving arms, watching over us from heaven until we are united again. The graveside service under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin will be Wednesday, January 6th at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. In lieu of flowers, donations may be sent to the American Lung Association Donation Processing Center, P.O. Box 11039, Lewiston, Maine, 04243. Yancey Lynette Sego Pittman. Yancey Lynette Sego Pittman, loving wife, mother, and grandmother, passed away on Tuesday, December 29th at age 79 after battling leukemia. Yancey was born February 16, 1941, to Edward Hugh Sego and Gladine Lily Childers Sego in Gorman, Texas, and grew up in Midland. Yancey is predeceased by her parents, husband, and brother Edward. She is survived by brother Wes, daughters and their spouses Molly and Mitch Ogden of Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Lynette and Shane Heelan of Dublin, Ireland, grandsons Joseph and David Ogden, and many close friends who love and miss her, especially her vitality and love of life. A memorial service will be held at Mount Pisgah Baptist Church in Oliver Springs, Tennessee, Tuesday, January 5th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. She will be interred with her husband at a later date in Midland, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorial donations may be made to Mount Pisgah Baptist Church Print Shop, 115 Old Hen Valley Road, Oliver Springs, Tennessee, 37840. The family would like to thank the dedicated caring staff and nurses of Methodist Medical Center in Oak Ridge, Thompson Cancer Center, and the Tennessee Cancer Center. Death notices. Joe Pete Pito Gutierrez. Joe Pete Pito Gutierrez passed away peacefully on December 30th. He is survived by his longtime wife, Iris B. Gutierrez of Midland, son Jimmy Page Gutierrez and son Joe Pete Gutierrez Jr., both of Midland, brother Joe Porras and wife Maria Porras of Midland, and Bobby J. Garcia and wife Laura Garcia of Midland, along with many nieces, nephews, cousins, aunts, and many friends. Services will be held at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. viewing will be on Sunday, January 3rd from 1 to 9 p.m. Another viewing on Monday, January 4th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And then funeral service at 2 p.m. Burial service will follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Nicholas Wayne Snyder. Nicholas Wayne Snyder, 40, of Odessa, passed away January 2nd. Service is pending with Nally Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Sarah Annette Tucker. Sarah Annette Tucker, 50, passed away on December 30th. A memorial service was held Thursday, December 31st at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel, 1502 North La Mesa Road at 6 p.m. In keeping with Sarah's wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Survivors include her daughter, Zay Burris, mother, Carolyn Olguin, companion, Raymond Espinosa, sisters, Sandy Sanchez, Sally Tucker Olivas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Welsh, under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. Front page. Stop the spread. Wear a mask. Protect yourself and others against COVID-19. New Year's Eve sweep results in nearly 50 arrests by Royal McGregor, RMCGREGOR, at OAOA.com. The Odessa Police Department detailed in a press release that local law enforcement agencies made a total of 49 arrests through its joint New Year's Eve DWI enforcement operation. The four law enforcement agencies that made those arrests include the Odessa Police Department, Texas Department of Public Safety, University of Texas Permian Basin Police, and Ector County Sheriff's Office. The operation resulted in a total of 49 arrests, which included 26 driving while intoxicated arrests and 23 arrests for additional offenses. The additional arrests were for manufacture or delivery of a controlled substance and felon in possession of a firearm. It's very important to come together, OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve LeSueur said during a phone interview on Monday morning. We've worked together several times in the past. It's so important, especially during the holiday weekend, because if we can prevent one serious accident or one fatal crash, then it is well worth it. A year ago, Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Odessa American that OPD, ECSO, and DPS charged 23 people with driving while intoxicated and 9 with public intoxication. Griffiths said he felt that number was low. OPD detailed in the news release that a first-time DWI arrest can cost up to $20,000 in fines, court fees, other penalties, and result in the suspension of your driver's license. LeSueur said it's important for people to plan ahead, whether it's a ride from friends or family, rideshare, or public transportation options. He also detailed, in addition to driving while intoxicated, law enforcement agencies also had to deal with winter weather, which included icy roads and snow. This year was a little trickier because the holiday weekend started on Thursday night, LeSueur said. We not only had to deal with DWIs, but it combined with winter weather. It's one thing dealing with people who are intoxicated during the nighttime hours, but it's another thing if they are driving around on icy roads. It adds a whole new element to it. COVID vaccine. Texas Tech University Health Science Center student Punit Paula Left receives the first dose of the Moderna COVID-19 vaccine from RN Veronica Contreras Monday at Texas Tech University Health Science Center's academic building in Odessa. Photo by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Tech medical students receive COVID vaccine. By Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Some 40 to 50 medical students attending Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center campus in Odessa received the COVID-19 vaccine Monday at the academic building. Currently, people like first responders, direct health care providers, and people in long-term care facilities are receiving the shots. If you are in Phase 1B, you are also eligible to get the COVID-19 vaccine, depending on availability and the vaccine provider. Vaccine supply remains limited, but more vaccine will be delivered to providers each week, the Texas Department of State Health Services website said. We are doing medical students today, but we are extending it throughout our campus to others who are healthcare support, which that is still part of 1A. 1A did recommend getting face-to-face providers, direct patient care providers, but also the support staff for those providers, said Dr. Timothy Benton, Regional Chairman, Associate Dean for Clinical Affairs and Professor at TTUHSC. Monday was the first day medical students were inoculated. Benton said it was initially offered to physicians and nurses in Texas Tech clinics, but many of them had already received vaccines through the hospitals, both Medical Center and Midland Memorial, since they received their supply about a week before Texas Tech did. We finished off that immediate group of physicians and nurses and saw that we had enough vaccine supply to move on further down the list and opened it up to students today. Plus, the students were gone for break. We've had interest from 40 medical students, so I'm expecting 40 to 50 students throughout the day today. Some of the students were, if they were around in the last couple of weeks, able to also get it through the hospitals, so we may not have to vaccinate all our students today, Benton said. He added that it's very important to get as many people in the population vaccinated as possible. For students, Benton said, getting the vaccination helps them and helps lower the virus in the community. It improves their situation, too, because their education has been interrupted through COVID and their clinical experiences have been interrupted, and they are part of the healthcare provision team, so we do want them more active. And yes, getting them vaccinated helps them to be more involved, but it also helps in the long run so that they can graduate from their programs and we have more healthcare providers in the community, he said. Benton noted that people need two doses of the vaccine to make it effective. The first dose does not give you immunity, he said. The immunity comes after the second dose, and that's probably 7 to 14 days, is what we believe. After the second dose, so even those that are currently getting shot number one, it is not necessarily reducing the burden of virus in the community. Additionally, there's not enough vaccine to reach full community immunity, so we need to get 60 to 70% of the community vaccinated. That will be several months away. Until then, we absolutely have to continue with masking, social distancing, and proper hygiene, Benton said. Nana Amakiri, a fourth-year medical student planning to go into ophthalmology, said he was grateful that students were able to get the vaccine. It's a great opportunity, and I'm grateful they're allowing us to get that done, Amakiri said. Puneet Palla, who expects to graduate from the physician assistant program in August, said it was an honor to receive the vaccine. I'm really amazed that our program was able to organize this for us, and I just feel really blessed to be able to get it so early and just to kind of provide more protection for the community and any patients I see, and just anyone around me, Paula said. He added that it has provided a sense of relief. It's really nice that they were able to get such very effective vaccines as well. I believe this is the Moderna vaccine, so it shows like a 92% effective rate, which is way higher than the flu, so it does provide a lot of relief, especially in such a short time, Paula said. He added that COVID has disrupted his learning. The problem with COVID is that you have a lot of similar symptoms as many common diseases, GI bugs, and then flu and URIs, upper respiratory infections. So there were quite a few patients I wasn't able to see because anyone that comes in with a fever, we have to back off. But I feel like our PA program did their best to keep us safe, and that's what's really important, Bala said. When restrictions were imposed in March 2020, Paula said they had to transition to a virtual platform. But luckily, the staff and the professors, they were able to adapt really quickly, so it was nice. It was disruptive, but it was handled really well, he added. COVID-19 vaccine information, TINYURL.com/Y6OJBBUV. On the net, TTUHSC.EDU. Phase 1B recipients include people 65 years of age and older, people 16 years of age and older with at least one chronic medical condition that puts them at increased risk for severe illness from the virus that causes COVID-19, such as but not limited to cancer, chronic kidney disease, COPD, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, heart conditions such as heart failure, coronary artery disease, or cardiomyopathies, solid organ transplantation, obesity and severe obesity, body mass index of 30 kg/m2 or higher, pregnancy, sickle cell disease, and type 2 diabetes mellitus. Council to Tackle Masks, Making Odessa Sanctuary for the Unborn, by Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council will tackle several controversial issues, including whether to repeal the city's current face covering mandate and consider passing a resolution that would ban abortions in the city when they reconvene for their first work session of the new year at 10 a.m. today. The agenda items are among several that new Mayor Javier Hoven asked to be considered by the council. The work session will be held virtually as part of COVID-19 precautions the city is currently taking. It was my understanding that the mask mandate had to be redone every 7 days, said Hoven, who has previously expressed opposition to wearing face coverings. But apparently it doesn't just expire. To rescind, it takes council action. It was a surprise to me and new council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata. I've asked for the issue to be placed on the agenda so that council can discuss it. It will be a decision made by council. Hoven added that he would like to see fewer COVID restrictions as soon as possible because many Odessa businesses are struggling to stay open or have already closed. Opening up our economy 100% is the goal of this mayor, Hoven said. I hope that's also the goal of council. Former Mayor David Turner, initially on November 24th, signed an ordinance limiting Odessa businesses to 50% capacity and requiring all employees and customers to wear face coverings while inside businesses. Turner's action came at a time when COVID-19 cases were soaring to record highs countywide. The council at the time voted unanimously to extend the ordinance indefinitely. The 50% business capacity portion of the ordinance was discontinued December 18th after COVID cases decreased significantly for 7 consecutive days. At that time, council elected to maintain the face covering mandate at the urging of local and state health officials. Hoven is also asking that the council change its work session meeting time to 5 p.m. so that more people can participate. Current work sessions are held at 10 a.m., said Hoven, who works third shift. No council members have objected to the time change. Hovind said he would also like council to discuss eliminating work sessions because he says they are, quote, redundant. New councilman Steve Thompson said he would consider the idea, but has not yet decided if he will support it. I would also like to see council go back to live in-person meetings, although that could be a logistical problem, said Hovind, referring to the need to follow CDC guidelines requiring face coverings and social distancing. I do think for council to get a better feel for each other, we need to be in person. Hovind is also asking that council consider passing a resolution that would make Odessa a, quote, sanctuary city for the unborn, end quote. The resolution is intended to outlaw abortions, but the legality of the action is currently being challenged by the ACLU and seven other communities that have passed the resolution and tried to enforce it, Hovind acknowledged. Hovind acknowledged that he's not aware of any abortion clinics or doctors in Odessa currently performing abortions. The resolution is more of a protection measure that would prohibit any future attempts to perform abortions locally. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Edgar County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 11,543. Edgar County negative, 37,671 out of 49,695 tested, with 481 pending. 193 deaths. Recovered, 9,711. Active, 1,651. ECISD daily cases, 0 students, 0 staff. U.S. cases, 20,558,489 total confirmed and 350,664 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. Medical panel. Star Hospice has scheduled an online COVID-19 vaccines, getting a better understanding from medical experts at 7 p.m. today on www.facebook.com/Star Hospice Now. Medical panel includes Dr. Jayaram B. Naidu, Dr. Suresh Prasad, Dr. Madhu Panganamamala, and Dr. Arnand Reedy. Moderator will be Pat Canty. Meeting. Landgraf Crutcher and Associates Incorporated and Ector County has scheduled a public information meeting at 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Gardendale Community Center, 4226 East Larkspur Lane, Gardendale. This meeting will be the second, and the purpose of the meeting is to solicit public input concerning the modified roadway improvement project for Cottonwood Road. The project begins on the western limit at the intersection of U.S. 385, Andrews Highway, and continues eastern to the limit of Midland County Line at 8.2 miles. The project is in the vicinity of Gardendale's second filling, Circle 7, University Acres, and Saddleback Ridge subdivisions in the county of Ector, Texas. The county wants to have a strong discussion of the proposed location to ensure it is the best solution for property owners, area residents, the traveling public, and Ector County. Written comments from the public regarding the project are requested and may be submitted at the meeting, in person, or by mail to the Ector County Public Works Department. Comments must be postmarked by Friday to be part of the meeting record. Users who are unable to submit comments at the public meeting can mail comments to Ector County Public Works Department, 1010 East 8th Street, Odessa, Texas, 79761. The meeting location is handicap accessible. Visit tinurl.com/Y7YHQPBD. Stock Show and Rodeo. The Sand Hills Stock Show and Rodeo has been scheduled at 7:30 p.m. Thursday through Saturday, January 13th through 15th, and 6:30 p.m. January 12th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. A bareback riding, saddle bronc riding, and bull riding special event will take place on Thursday. For tickets, visit boxofficesolutions.net. 340 days. For 340 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through December 4th, the city has spent $87,490.99 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Closing prices. Posted, $44.10. Futures, $47.62. Natural gas, $2.581. Benchmark U.S. fell 90 cents to $47.62 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.